What's going on? Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. It is heard live every day from noon to 3 on WBT Radio in Charlotte. And if you want exclusive content, like invitations to events, the weekly live stream, my daily show prep with all the links, become a patron. Go to thepetecallinershow.com. Make sure you hit the subscribe button. Get every episode for free right to your smartphone or tablet. And again, thank you so much for your support. Mondays, I usually chat with Congressman Dan Bishop. He could not be here. He's got other engagements that he normally did. But I talked with him this morning. And so here's how that sounded.
All right, Congressman Dan Bishop, let's first start off with the vote on the Ukraine funding. And I guess this was more than just Ukraine funding, right? It was also funding for Israel and funding for Taiwan. So did you vote on each of these issues individually and then they packaged them all together? I admit I was not following all of the votes as closely probably as I should have over the weekend.
Yeah, thanks for letting me be with you, Pete. It's typical ledger domain in Congress. There were four individual votes as part of this package. But the rule that governs how it's being deliberated upon and decided by the House of Representatives provided at the end that whatever passed would be a single piece of legislation. So ostensibly separate votes, and that was to make sure they had cobbled together the majority for each of the pieces among differing, you know, shifting majorities. And yet at the end, it would have all the four ordained parts that the Senate had passed before. Plus that last part about the TikTok ban.
So it didn't require you to vote for the entire package. It just required votes. Okay, so you were allowed to then, which I kind of like, I think that's probably a good thing. You get to vote on the individual issues, right? Versus throwing it all into one big kitchen sink kind of thing and having to vote on all of it, like an omnibus?
Arguably so, but you end up with one big kitchen sink. Mm-hmm. And except for they did not deign to put any provision for securing the border in that sink, and could have if they're going to do it for all these other parts. But to your question, I voted against all of the parts, and certainly against the Ukraine $60 billion part. Vote except for the part about the support for Israel, which I had considerable misgivings for, because it has $9 billion, if I remember, for so-called humanitarian relief. A large part of that goes to Gaza, which tacitly means that it's going to be influenced or controlled by Hamas, which is the elected government of Gazans. And so, but I did vote for that, just couldn't leave Israel unassisted.
So, what's the difference between the arguments for funding the Ukrainians against the Russians versus funding the Israelis against Hamas?
Well, in the one instance, there are a couple differences. One is the length of time that the Ukraine war has been ongoing, and the second is the effectiveness of the strategy and whether there is a strategy. In the case of Ukraine, we've poured $113 billion or more. I see the figure shift a little bit of something in that neighborhood. And I don't think there's a plan. No one's been able to articulate a plan. Warren Davidson from Ohio has a piece of legislation just requiring the articulation of a strategy so that you could evaluate the degree to which it can be accomplished. And the House has refused to do that, or the Congress has refused to do that. No one knows that we're just pouring tons of money there without any real basis for expectation we're going to solve the problem. In Israel, you have to say the Iron Dome and the Arrow project have been quite successful. That, of course, is a long-standing struggle. The only democracy in the region, a very successful one, long-standing ally of the United States. Tyranny surrounding it and under constant threat. But the main, you know, attack vector of recent years has been all the missiles and rockets, now low-cost drones being shipped in the hundreds, and the Iron Dome has been the protection that has worked. It's kept Israel from being devastated by those attacks, and I think we ought to maintain and resupply that as much as necessary.
So because of the way this this all shook out over the weekend, there's now an effort underway again to motion to vote to vacate the chair, get rid of the speaker, Mike Johnson in this case. Your thoughts on that? Do you have an opinion about which way you would go if that thing is actually brought forward?
I oppose vacating the chair at this time. Mm-hmm. And there are a couple, now I think that Speaker Johnson is not doing what he should do. And I think, I don't know how we cobble together a majority support of center right voters to keep a Republican majority in the House, given sort of a betrayal down the line of every principle at every leverage point, and sacrificing the leverage points to basically accomplish nothing of substance for conservative voters. But I don't, the problem is, number one, is not isolated to Mike Johnson. There's a dominant, albeit not majority, portion of the Republican conference, the security state, the appropriators, people like that. And Mike's not really the problem. He's failed to oppose the problem, but he's not the problem alone. And number two, you've got to be able to, if you're going to remove the speaker, you've got to have some prospect, even if it's not immediately totally clear how you're going to proceed. You got to have some prospect of improvement. And I just don't think at this time, heading into an election with nobody else on the landscape as an obvious successor or possible successor, I don't think it makes sense.
Yeah. And I'm kind of reminded of old Parks Helms, the late Parks Helms, who used to talk about how he could count the votes. And, you know, if you can the votes at the House side of things, whether they're Republican moderates, quote unquote, or from blue districts or something, you know, if they are going to go with the Democrats, then you got to count those votes that way. And it's not going to, it doesn't mean, it means you're not going to win those votes. So you've got to deal with what you got.
Said another way, you can't get carried away with your own emotion. That's been something I've particularly said. I've been frustrated in a good while as we've tried to shake up that institution and make it perform better and confront existential crises and do things it needs to do. It doesn't help to get mad or to be driven by anger. That alone, that won't solve any problem. You got to sort of step back, look at the situation, figure out what you can do, and first, do no harm.
Yeah. Well, speaking of harm and doing it, this is the latest from the U.S. Department of Education. Late last week, they finalized their Title IX rules. I almost feel like the whole debate over transgender access to locker rooms and bathrooms and athletic competitions, I kind of feel like we were on the front end of this debate for some reason. It seems like, right, what, 10 years ago? Is that going back with the whole HB2 thing? But it's like this is now the position of the U.S. Department of Education, right? They're attaching funds or they're putting these stipulations on the federal funds so what schools are not going to be able to get federal money if they don't adopt this new definition, adding gender identity to basically sex, to call and conflating the two terms, even though we've been told for years that they're not the same thing. But now I guess they need to be the same thing.
It's totally irrational and confusing. And yes, you're correct. You know, there is a lot of water under the bridge since 2016, when I was the lead primary sponsor of HB2 that was so controversial. But all it said was, in response to Charlotte's ordinance that said we're going to eliminate separate bathrooms for men and women. That's really what it said. And you couldn't, in any business, 10,000 businesses in the city. We reversed that and said, no, you're going to have, at least in public restrooms, you're going to let businesses do what they want, but in public restrooms, you're going to be separated by biological sex. But that's, you know, there's been constant turmoil on this issue since. There was the Obama administration tried to get started involved to put their finger on the scale of that. The Trump administration went the other way, and now this rule's been pending a long time. But in the meantime, this has, you know, gone into a number of different directions. Maybe the most important one is fairness in women's sports, girls' sports, that 23 states now have passed laws saying that males, biological males, cannot compete in women's athletics. And I think it's as obvious and common sense as can be, and I believe most Americans think so. But in practical effect, this new regulation from the final rule from the Biden administration will probably, we'll see what the litigation, how the litigation fares, because I think that's where the avenue is. These things are going to be dealt with. Unless the litigation stops it, it's going to substantially reverse those 23 states that have come forward to deal with that in that way.
So do you, you are running for North Carolina Attorney General. Is this something that if it were still in the courts at the time you were to win and take office, is there a role for the state attorney general to play in this fight?
You'd better believe it. And in fact, when I tell people, a lot of folks have said, are you leaving Washington to run for a state office because you're basically giving up and you just want an easy coast out? That's not in my nature. What I've said about Congress being stuck in so many ways in a status quo and inability to proceed, to particularly to fight on behalf of center-right conservative Americans, these state AG positions have become some of the most consequential policy positions in the country. Now, policy, I don't mean policy in the sense you're making policy, but in terms of protecting existing longstanding fundamental legal rights. And the right to privacy is one of those in the context of physical privacy and the equal rights of women to participate in athletics. And yes, I think there are there will be, frankly, our attorney general ought to join those several other state attorneys general who are coming out in various ways in the next week or so to challenge this new Title IX regulation. They've been warning and seeking. They've gotten some injunctions against early effectiveness of the proposed rule, and they're going to be fighting it. And if I were in office, I would be fighting it as well. And it's very important. There are different tactics legally, different court systems to be involved in. It's a state court system. You could take action to try to strengthen the enforcement of the policy that North Carolina has passed under its rule protecting women's sports, its law, excuse me. And yes, I'd be involved in that if I were attorney general.
Yeah. Congressman Dan Bishop, I appreciate your time as always. Thanks so much. And stay safe in your travels around the state.
Good to be with you, Pete.
So this $95 billion foreign aid package, about $61 billion of it for Ukraine and replenishing U.S. weapons stockpiles. This is according to the AP News. The overall amount provided to Ukraine for the purchase of weapons would be $13.8 billion. Ukraine would receive more than $9 billion of economic assistance in the form of, quote, forgivable loans. Which I think, like, that's, I think that they code that in their budget as a line item, Zelensky slush fund. I had not heard this. I just heard it on the news. I had not heard that apparently he's been accused of siphoning off a bunch of money and stocking it away for himself, which, like, I understand on the one hand, because if he has to flee, you know, he's going to have to have some pretty good security for the rest of his life, because you know how those Russians are. Putin, like, yeah, he'll come after you for a very long time, poison you with chemicals and all sorts of stuff. So about $26 billion of the package goes to support Israel. $4 billion of the $26 goes to replenishing Israel's missile defense systems. Over $9 billion goes toward, quote, humanitarian assistance in Gaza. So I know it's humanitarian assistance, but I get the feeling we're funding both sides. Do you get that feeling here sometimes? There's another $8 billion for helping U.S. allies in the Indo-Pacific region. $3.3 of the $8 would go towards submarine infrastructure and development, with an additional $1.9 billion to replenish U.S. weapons provided to Taiwan and regional allies. That's according to the Associated Press. There is this piece at The Federalist by Sean Fleetwood. Quoting Mike Johnson's repeated pledge to secure the U.S.-Mexico border before advancing foreign funding, which obviously did not happen, and you heard Dan Bishop say that. Now, the House has passed a border funding bill. A border security bill. They have done that. The Senate won't touch it, but the House has done it. Mike Johnson is unable to win enough support to get funding for a border security bill that will pass muster with his Republican colleagues or his Democrat colleagues. Right? They're too far apart. Democrats and Republicans are too far apart, and the ones that are willing to negotiate in the middle aren't, they're not enough of them. And so nothing is happening. And so everybody just is standing around pointing at each other, accusing the other of being the problem, when we all know the problem is Biden. Well, in Congress. I mean, they could do more, right? But the problem is you've got a very close House divided almost equally between Republicans and Democrats. You've got Republicans that are in blue districts that are very worried that if they go along with a border bill that they're able to be demonized with, if they vote for it, they're going to lose reelection. And that does not help advance conservative agenda items if the Republicans end up winning more seats in November. So, like, I deal with things as they are, right? What did Rush always talk about? He's the mayor of Realville, right? How are things as they are? Not what I want them to be, but what are they actually on the ground? Reality. All right, so Mike Johnson repeated a pledge to secure the U.S.-Mexico border before advancing foreign funding. A bill was passed by the House. Senate wouldn't take it up. And so they tried to do the, you know, Biden's bad border bill. That thing went down in defeat. They kept trying to tie the foreign funding to the border security. And I get it. I get it. One of the things that it has become very clear to me that members of Congress and most Americans do not really care about the deficit or the debt. I do. I have cared about these topics for a long time. But I learned about, 15 years ago, that while some people in the Republican Party will pay lip service to caring about it, they actually do not. And nobody on the Democrat side does. they don't even mention it. To them, it's all make-believe money, right? And they get the MMT stuff and they just keep printing it, whatever, doesn't matter. Whenever you ask them how much should we be giving, it's always more, right? So there isn't anybody over on that side of the aisle, which, by the way, if you, like Democrats, if they actually were to attempt to fiscally restrain spending, right, to be somewhat more responsible, it's not even a lot. I mean, just by comparison to the Republican Party, you don't need to be that much more responsible, right? But as we sit here today, the Republican Party is actually more fiscally responsible. That doesn't make them fiscally responsible. It just makes them a little bit less bad, right? So if the Democrats, like, there's an opportunity here for Democrats to say, you know what? We believe in big government. Sorry. We believe in very big government because the Republicans believe in big government. We believe in very big government, but we're going to actually fund it and we're going to raise your taxes to do so. Right. If they were just on it, well, okay, they would never be honest because they would never win. But if they were, like, at least that would be an honest position. Where, and on the other side, you got Republicans who say, you know, we're going to have a big government. We're going to give you lots of lip service about paying for it, but we're actually going to just do tax cuts. And then we're going to push out the costs of those. And we're never going to balance the budget. And it's all just moving money around on the ledger. And it's just not sustainable. And it hasn't been for a very long time. And I keep seeing these predictions, and we're getting pretty close. Like, it's going to be a couple of years, less than a decade, when all these things start going bankrupt on us, right? So I'm going to be right at retirement age, right on schedule, which, as a Gen Xer, I have known from the very beginning when I went about into the workplace, I knew that these entitlement programs we're going to be bankrupt by the time I get to retirement age. And so all I have ever asked is for the ability to take some portion of this, of the money that you are taking from my salary involuntarily to pay for the Social Security, Medicare, whatever. Can I take some of that money and invest it somewhere else where I can make a higher return and therefore protect myself better from when the calamity occurs? And there has only been one attempt at that in my entire adult life. And that was George W. Bush after he won re-election. And he said he was going to go ahead and touch that third rail of American politics, Social Security. And he was going to allow us to take, I think it was something like 1% or 1.5%. Like nothing, minimal, and invested elsewhere. and like that was the end of Western civilization, apparently. Like the reaction from the media and the Democrats, but I repeat myself, and then also Republicans, like nobody wanted to touch it. Everybody got scared and it died. And now you see similar arguments happening, right? Whenever anybody says, maybe we should adjust the retirement age. Yes, you should adjust the retirement age. Absolutely. You should also adjust the cap on the percentages. So if you make a lot of money, you're capped at the amount that you donate into, quote, donate, that you have confiscated from you that goes into Social Security. And what that means is then that you get like really, really wealthy people, when they retire, they get their Social Security money back. And it's like, it's nothing to them. Somebody's got a monthly income getting spun off of a trust fund or something, and or his investments or businesses or whatever, and it's millions of dollars a month or something. And you think that this $2,000 from Social Security, you think that matters to these really wealthy people? So like you could do a means test, whatever. And I don't necessarily I don't know what the particular proposals are. I'm not advancing any. I'm just saying these are ideas that are out there and you can't even bring them up. You bring them up, you get accused of throwing grandma off the cliff, right? And the Republicans used to at least try to bring it up. Now they don't. And Trump ran on the idea that I'm not going to touch any of the entitlements, right? Okay, so, all right, fine. They're all going to go bankrupt. And I guess that's where we're going to go, right? Just forward, as the left says, forward, right off the cliff. Awesome. Okay, and then it all goes bankrupt. Can't pay any of the liabilities. You know where we're paying to service the debt right now? It's almost $1 trillion at this point. That's nuts. We don't have the money. But here's the thing. No one cares. No one cares. I care. I've cared for a long time. But nobody cares about these really big numbers. They don't even understand the big numbers. They're too big. And so I get a little annoyed, a little peeved when I hear people complain about foreign aid of whatever this one thing is, like $90 billion. $90 billion, and that's a very large number too. And they complain about that. And they're like, we need to make sure, $90 billion, we don't have the money. Yeah, that's, the 90 is not what's bankrupting us. The 90 is nothing compared to the trillion, you know? And you're not even willing to look at the trillion. But the 90 is going to, this is what you want me to be outraged over? I find a lot of it to be performative. I really do. Plus, I'm also an anti-communist.
Okay, if you're listening to this podcast, you are obviously paying attention to the world around us. You also have really great taste, I might add. But if you haven't started getting prepared for various emergencies, I got to ask, what are you waiting for? Please call my friends Bill and Jan at Carolina Readiness Supply, and they'll help get you started. If you have no idea how to start, they can help you. If you're an experienced prepper, they can help you too. Being prepared is just smart. We've already established that you're smart. I mean, you listen to this podcast after all. So let's put those smarts into action. Go to CarolinaReadiness.com. That's CarolinaReadiness.com or call them at 828-226-7239. Carolina Readiness Supply has 2,000 square feet of supplies as well as educational materials that you're going to need for any kind of emergency. Veteran-owned Carolina Readiness Supply. Will you be ready when the lights go out?
There is a good argument to be made. There is a good argument to be made that we don't have a strategy with Ukraine. And Dan Bishop mentioned that in the interview earlier this hour. What is America's strategy for accomplishing whatever the goal is, right? To repel the Russian invasion, right? If that's the point of pouring all the money into Ukraine, having them fight Putin so we don't have to, right? Fight them there so we don't fight them here, whatever. Like, oh, I kid. That's a golden oldie. That's just a throwback to 25 years ago. 24. More than 2 years and $113 billion later, Ukraine is not any closer to beating Russia than the day Moscow launched its invasion, right? There's been no explanation from the Biden administration or any of the other Ukraine First member of Congress on what they view as a reasonable resolution to the conflict. This is a piece at thefederalist.com by Sean Fleetwood. who's a staff writer and a graduate of University of Mary Washington. He previously served as a state content writer for Convention of States Action. He says, those claiming that the end goal is a total defeat of Russia are living in a fantasy land. Russia is a nuclear power and possesses one of the most sophisticated militaries in the world. Barring a sudden collapse of Russian governance, there is no scenario in which Ukrainian soldiers are going to be parading through the streets of Moscow as blue and yellow Ukrainian flags wave atop the Russian White House. Yeah, I don't know if that's the goal. I don't think it is. But therein lies the problem. And that's why you've got this polling. This is from DailySignal.com, which is a project of the Heritage Foundation. Support for Ukraine funding stands at 33%. Opposition's at 47%, right? This is why I've been like ambivalent on it this entire time, because I don't know what your plan is. What is the goal? I understand Ukraine got invaded, and I also understand that they're really kind of corrupt and probably in bed with the Biden Inc. folks. So, I don't know who to root for except injuries. I'm kidding. I'm not rooting for injuries. No, I don't want there to be war. But I also know that Vladimir Putin is constantly looking to invade all of his neighbors again, which makes me wonder, like, why didn't you just keep them as part of the Soviet Union in the first place? Why do we have to go through all this? You guys promised us that the communism was over. And then we imported it. Indo-Pacific funding garners 23% support, 42% opposed. Funding for Israel draws support from 27% and 50% opposed. Right? So is this a function of isolationism? Is this a fear of debt and inflation? Is this just the general, like, I don't want to give any money to anybody else because we're broke? Okay, but the $90 billion is not anywhere near the $1 trillion that we're running in just the debt service, right? Our unfunded liabilities are somewhere north of like $80 trillion. And no one is introducing any kind of a plan. No one wants to have any kind of an argument about any of this. So, I don't believe people. This is where I come down. I don't believe people are actually worried about this. I think they just don't want any money to go to any foreign countries. And they have a higher priority, which is the southern border. That is mine as well. But it's not an either or. This is a false dichotomy. It's a false choice being thrown at us that you either have to support the funding for the border or you have to support the funding for fighting the Hamas or fighting the Russians. Republican voters, only 17% support a $60 billion loan for the nation. 66% are opposed. Older people and Democrats are more likely to support these things. John asks about these loans. They're forgivable loans. Does that mean that Ukraine has now gone to college? Well, yeah, maybe. That's does seem to be the case. I will say the issue is now swept off the table, at least for now. So maybe hammer away at the border. Maybe come back to that. Maybe keep running bills, individual bills. Take your border bill and break it all apart and do individual funding things and get all these Democrats on the record. I mean, like, that's the thing. I don't know what else to do when you've got all the Democrats voting in lockstep against any kind of border bill that Biden won't sign on to, right? Republican ideas for border security do not pass muster with the Democrats. They have a different incentive. So I'm not sure what it is we are expecting Republicans to do when they have a two-vote majority or whatever it is. And you got a good chunk of the Republicans in your party in the House that agree with the Democrats on this stuff because they're afraid of getting thrown out in their upcoming election. So I don't know if this is a function of isolationism or if it's a function of the debt, or if it's just a function of I want something else to spend my money on, or it's a function of just, you know, being outraged at everything and no solutions.
All right, that'll do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. I could not do the show without your support and the support of the businesses that advertise on the podcast. So if you'd like, please support them too and tell them you heard it here. You can also become a patron at my Patreon page or go to thepetecallinershow.com. Again, thank you so much for listening, and don't break anything while I'm gone.